Before we even kick off the podcast, I just want to remind everyone to go like, subscribe, and keep up with these weekly episodes. If you like what you hear, spread the word so more coaches can tune in for our weekly podcasts. All right, here we go. The Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by GameStrat. GameStrat is the number one sideline replay choice for the top football programs in the country. Their system is extremely reliable, easy to set up and use, and they also have the best customer service in the industry. Go to GameStrat.com to learn why more coaches keep switching to GameStrat for their sideline replay system. That's GameStrat.com. GameStrat.com. Before we move on, let's talk about the fastest growing sports team software, All In Team Sports, and how it's helping coaches save time while streamlining their communication, scheduling, and so much more. It's no surprise that coaches are always looking for ways to increase efficiency and save time. That's why this software is so great. It offers coaches all the features they need to manage their teams, from player nutrition and health goals to in-app awards, document sharing, and a team feed that immediately boosts player engagement. This software makes it easy for coaches to stay organized and help their teams succeed. The software also allows coaches to set up a variety of different activities and tasks. For example, coaches can create a schedule for their team, assign tasks to individual players, and even create custom messages for specific groups or individuals. This allows coaches to quickly communicate with their players and keep track of their progress. Plus, the software also allows coaches to create and manage sports-specific activities such as drills and practices. And for all the football coaches out there, they have a video system that is built to work with Huddle that is top-notch. You can sign up today using code HOGFootballChat to get 75 days entirely free. And I promise it will be an app that will replace all others on your phone. Check them out by going to allinteamsports.com or give them a follow on Twitter at allinteamsports. Hi, I'm Coach Tony Schiffman, and welcome to the Hog Football Podcast, where we talk all things football and all things offensive line. Hey guys, I have got with me a very special guest today, Coach David Alexander. Coach Alexander is currently the offensive line coach at Sepulpa High School in Oklahoma. Spent some time before that at Jenks High School, was the head coach at Broken Arrow, and got his coaching career started at Jenks High School as well. What most of you guys might not know about Coach Alexander is that he is an absolute stud who started 112 games for Philadelphia Eagles in the late 80s, early 90s, was a fifth-round draft pick of the Eagles, won the Ed Block Courage Award in 1992, was the Philadelphia Sports Writers Humanitarian of the Year in 1995, played for the New York Jets, got his career started at Tulsa, playing there in the early 80s, and just an absolute treat to have you on today, Coach. How are you?
Man, Tony, I couldn't be any better, dude. I appreciate you asking me to do this. I love talking ball. And, you know, if you want to talk about some of that old stuff, I can see how much of that I can remember. But, I've been so lucky and so blessed to be able to do so many cool things. And, you know, now I'm just kind of riding out and hoping to teach some of the younger guys some of the stuff that I learned.
Well, you know, you and I have been Twitter buddies for quite some time. So this is very cool for me to get to talk to you. I love college football. I love NFL football. I'm sort of like stuck in that time frame that you played in the NFL, actually. Like, that's like my favorite time frame. So this to me is like I said, a treat to be able to talk to you and kind of grill you on some of those things. But it won't be too difficult. Don't worry.
Hey, well, let's dig into it, man. Let's have some fun.
Well, first thing I got to ask you, and this is, you know, you're going to get a couple questions I ask everybody. Talk to me about how the offensive line was an important role on some of the really good teams that you were a player on and a coach for.
Oh, gosh, Tony, that's such a great question, right? Offensive line coaches and offensive line players. That's such a fantastic question. Well, offensive line is the most unique, and I know you and I are both biased.
Right.
It's the most unique position, right, in any sport. right? It's the only position, right? And every sport you can name where it's good to have your back to the ball, right? It's great when you never see the ball.
Right.
So it's an orchestrated dance. It's an orchestrated violent dance. And to be great individually, you know, takes a lot of skills.
Right.
Okay. And that's obvious, right? That's not, but to be great collectively, man takes an unbelievable amount of communication that people that have never done it or been around it don't understand.
Right.
Verbal and nonverbal. You know, you got to, and probably, you know, every sport talks about trust between players. But I'm telling you, if you really want to move a 300-pound man, you have to come off the ball with everything you've got, absolutely everything you've got. And you
right.
can't go right down the middle of him, right? You've got to take a piece of him. So to come off the ball as absolutely hard as you can, you got to trust the guy behind you, to trust the guy next to you, right, that he's going to cover, right, your weak spots. And it's a beautiful, violent, orchestrated dance between between guys that just love what they're doing and love each other.
Yeah.
It's been, you know, and the NFL is more unique than any other place as far as that goes, because there's such a small group of men.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you've coached long enough, you know, when you were at Tulsa, I'm sure there were probably 15 guys in the room. And then, you know, you've coached long enough, I'm sure you've had 20, you know, groups of 20 guys in the room.
Yeah.
I mean, what's an NFL offensive line room? Is it 8 guys, 9 guys?
Yeah. You know, back then, you know, back when I was playing, you know, Tony, there was no taxi squad. There was no practice squad.
Right.
Right. And so the goal every year for the coaches was to carry 8 every Sunday.
Right.
Right? Every 8 offensive linemen. But I couldn't even count how many games. It had to be in the low 20s of games that we went in with 7 players. You
right.
know, someone would pull a groin on a Wednesday, or maybe they even suited up on Sunday, but you know, there was no way they were ever going to play unless, you know, everybody else got really, really banged up and really hurt, and they can go out there and, you know, take tickets and,
right.
and be a turnstile. But
right,
yeah. So you know, you're doing everything. You know, practice and going to dinner and travel on the road with 8 guys. You know, it's an amazing deal.
Yeah, and like you said, you've got to have a good relationship with those guys. You can't. And I'm sure inevitably it happened. There's, you know, a little bit
of
dislike, but you've got to do your best to respect those guys that you're working with those numbers.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, you don't have to be best of friends.
Right.
You don't have to, right. You know, be at their baby's birth and, you know,
right.
be their godfather or their kid. Have a, you know, for to be successful, right, an offensive line group has got to have an amazing amount of trust amongst itself.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. Yeah. And that transfers on any level, truthfully, because it's
sure. Oh, yeah. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yes. Any offensive line. So I had when I was so long story how I got there, but when I started coaching offensive line at Jinx, you know, Coach Trimble had that place rocking and rolling, right? Obviously, I mean, long before I got there.
Right.
And, you know, he was the first coach in Oklahoma to realize, I say the first, you know, there was a guy, Bristow. There were some coaches that did, you know, a lot of conditioning, but he's the first guy that really sat down in January and we are going to install a weight program, you
right.
know, didn't have a weight coach, just had, you know, this was a orchestrated goal on Coach Trimble's part. And so that place was just a machine by the time I got there. And so some of the offensive lines that I had, you know, had 3 and 4, college football players on, you know, not all Division I, but
right.
you know, when you've got a high school offensive line with, you know, 3 or 4 college guys on it that have been in the weight room more than their opponent, you know, and they're already, and they're, and God given ability. You know, we had some great, great groups.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy to think about that. Just the, for people that don't know Jenks, Oklahoma, that's just, you know, one of the premier programs in the entire nation. And,
for your listeners, right. Go Google the Jenks Trojans and look at the history, this little brag, right. I'm on your pod, so I'm going to brag a little bit.
Yeah, go for it.
Jenks and all the great players and all the, you know, NFL players that have come through there. And all the, you know, Power Five backs that have come through there. Jenks has had three running backs rush for over 2,000 yards in a season.
Yeah.
Okay. And all three of them were, when I was the offensive line coach, they're Jenks from 04 to 12, right? So we had Alex Ross, we had Trayvon Bury, and we had a guy named Zach Ranger. So, Zach played at Tulsa. Alex Ross played at Oklahoma. But the best one of the bunch of them was a guy named Trayvon Bury. And, you know, he never made it in college. Went off the JUCO and never made it. Never really set foot on a college football field. But, so we had great players, obviously, every year. But that was kind of cool. It's kind of a cool deal.
Yeah. No, that's real cool. You talked about getting in, starting coaching. Was that something that you thought about, you know, during your career as a player, whether it be high school, college, or the pros, or was it kind of when you retired, you were done with the game and you got kind of talked into it? How did you get involved?
100% got talked into it, Tony. 100%, right? So we moved back. My career was coming to an end, right? The injuries were piling up.
Mm-hmm.
I had a bunch of knee surgeries and there was some other stuff, you know, shoulders and everything was just kind of falling apart as it does in 10 years in the NFL.
Right.
my wife sent back to Oklahoma where we're from, said, hey, find us a house, and she bought a house in the Jenks school district, right? Not because it was in Jenks, but just because it was the house that she found that she liked. And so that was 1997. Right. So Alan Trimble's first year at Jenks was 19 as a head coach was 1996. So I didn't know anything about Alan Trimble and he didn't know anything about me. But my oldest son. So in 90, he was going into elementary school football and the little league played their games on the stadium there at Jenks. And you know, Alan was always around on Saturdays, and we became friends.
Mm-hmm.
We became friends long before I went to coach for him. So starting at about the year 2000, he started asking me to come coach junior high for him. And I kept telling him no. I told him no, right? No, not doing it, not mm-hmm. doing it. The summer of 2004, he called me, and it was after July 4th. He said, all right, Dave, you are my eighth grade head football coach. You've got two teams, and you're the head coach of both of them. You can hire a couple guys for each team, and I'll find you some science teacher, right, to be on each team so they can, you can have a teacher there, but you run it. It's your shot. It's your show, and you can't tell me no. He had two head coaches, two eighth grade head coaches, that both got varsity jobs in other school districts there in July.
Right.
So I said, okay, Alan, right, I'll do it. So 2004, I go and I coach eighth grade football. I hire some guys, hire some old Jenks guys, some retired guys, hire a couple friends of mine, and we coach eighth grade football.
Right.
And the first year, eighth grade plays eight games in Oklahoma. So we went 7-1. And then second year, we went 8-0. And, I'm like, man, this is easy. after the 05 season, the offensive coordinator was at Jenks, left.
Mm-hmm.
And Coach Lorne Montgomery, the coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
He's now the head coach over at Bixby. So they called me in the office, said, hey, want you to move up to varsity and coach line. So, of course, you know, at that time I'm having a blast. And so I said, sure, but I'm not teaching. I've got my own business. I'm doing a general contractor. I'm building houses mostly, but I was building all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so started coaching varsity offensive line, and we win a couple championships in 06 and 07. And I'm like, man, this is easy. you know, then we had a couple years where we didn't win. It got beat, you know, in the finals a couple times, and you know, had some kids, you know, just those years you had kids hurt and you just weren't very good. And, but now I'm just absolutely falling in love with it, Tony. I mean, the kids, the work ethic, Coach Trimble mostly,
mm-hmm.
right? Coach Montgomery. We you know, we just had a really special offensive coaching staff. We had a great group of guys. It was fun to go to work with. So I went and sat down with Coach Trimble and said, okay, man, I'm in. What do I do? He said, well, let's get you a teaching certificate and get you going. And so in the summer before 2010, I took a couple tests, got my teaching certificate. Jinx hired me. And so I've been teaching algebra and algebra 2, 2010. Absolutely loving it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's kind of how it started, dude. It was crazy. It was unexpected. And it's also been one of the best things that I've ever happened to me.
Yeah. And it's funny how everyone's coaching story is obviously different. And it's always funny how we get into it and how it's just sort of, it's like, you know, putting your hand in the glove and just feeling the comfort of it.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
But everyone's different. You know, everyone, it takes that certain, you know, some guys do it right away. Some guys do it later in life. And it's still, that connection just still kind of resonates with them. You went from Jenks. I didn't realize this. I pulled up your Wikipedia page just because that's, you know, I'm such a classy researcher. you went from Jenks back to your old stomping grounds where you played at Broken Arrow, and ended up leading them to a state title in 2018. Talk to me a little bit about what it was like going back to, you know, a place you went to high school, and talk to me a little bit about that season. You know, by the time you guys won in 2018, we'd been Twitter friends for a while, and I followed you and I followed Rowdy. So it was fun watching you guys do that, but just take me a little bit through that process going back, and then that season.
Well, right, so let me back up. So right at the Jinx, rocking and rolling, everybody expected Coach Trimble to be there for the next 25 years, right? He was only 1 year older than me. So he was going to be there till he was in his mid 70s.
Right.
Coordinator was a guy named, is you know, Dub Maddox. Everybody seen Dub on Twitter, yep. Right? The R4 system. You know, and Dub was not teaching and had no desire to be a head coach, right? He's making so much money, you know, doing his off the field, off the Jinx field
right.
business, you know, spreading the knowledge of quarterback play, you know, around the country, right? And so I'm like, well, I've done this, right? I've got my teaching certificate. I'm all in. I want to go be a coordinator, right, and call plays, or a head coach. Mm-hmm. And so Broken Arrow had tried to hire me since the time I got back from – I mean, I know I told you about Allen, but they had tried to hire me. The previous four head coaches all tried to hire me as an assistant.
Right.
you know, so – Rick Jones, Whitson, Lancaster, Spavital, you know, they all tried, they all called, said he's interested in coming.
Right.
So I finally, I'm like, my family was here. My brother's here. My sister was here. All, you know, high school friends, there's still people in administration that, you know, knew me and wanted me. And, you know, the timing was right. The timing was perfect. You know, that's the way those head coaching stories go. Right.
Right.
I mean, you just kind of right place, right time. So I went over there, and so a little background. Broken Arrow is the largest high school in the state of Oklahoma. Has been forever, right?
Oh, I didn't since know 19, that. Wow.
Yeah, it's the biggest school in the state, and they've been playing football since 1908, and they've never won a football state championship. Never won one.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's a big town. It's 105,000. You know, why can't they win? Why can't they win? And so I interviewed for the job, and I told them what it would take to win. I had a plan. Told them how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't just, oh, hey, hire me, I'll show you the secret. I laid it all out there and got the job. And so we started implementing the plan, and it was a lot of fun, man. I got to work with some unbelievable player coaches. You know, we went, you know, not only had Broken Arrow not won a state championship, they had only been in two state championship games in their history.
Right.
So we were able to take them to the state championship game in 2015 and got beat by Jinx. We had beaten them in the regular season, got beat by them in the championship game. And then, right, Magic kind of struck in 2018 and undefeated and state championship. It was really surreal.
Yeah.
And one heck of a great ride. And it was couldn't have been better, man. It was storybook.
Was that like going into that season, did you guys have, you know, we all as coaches, we have our secret conversations that the players don't know about where we kind of sit there and say, we're not going to be very good, or, oh, we could be something special. Did you guys sort of have a feeling going into that season that, hey, we could get this done this year?
Well, we knew. So that group, that group of seniors that senior year, right, they those poor kids, a bunch of them started as sophomores,
mm-hmm.
right, which for a big school like that is not very, you know, it's not very exciting. You know, I have to tell you, at a 6A school, the number of sophomores you start is the number of losses you're going to have,
right.
Which is just about right what it was for us in 16. But the weight program and the way the discipline with those kids had and the work ethic that they all had was just, you know, like you said, it was just kind of magical. Now,
right.
we knew our offensive line was going to be beast, right, with Coach Harper coaching them. We knew we had a tailback that he would never make the track team unless he was throwing a shot put. Okay. he wasn't going to outrun anybody.
Right.
He loved the weight room and he loved his teammates, and he was big, physical, and enjoyed that part of it. He enjoyed being big and physical.
Right.
And then defensively, we had three linebackers. This was going to be their third year to start. And we put everything in their hands.
Yeah.
Those kids were amazing. Now, with all that being said, we had two senior receivers. We had senior defensive backs. We didn't have a returning quarterback. Right? So you're like, you know, that's the one thing. Right, just give me somebody that can get us lined up, check it to the shade or check it to the three technique, right, and tell me if it's two high or one high, and you know, we're going to be good. And
yeah.
And you know what, the most amazing thing happened that year, and it started that summer. We ended up being a two quarterback system, Tony.
Oh, wow. Right?
And everybody tells you it doesn't work, and it doesn't work unless the two quarterbacks are all in.
Right.
And, you know, you got to give a ton of credit to those two young men. They supported each other. They were completely different players. One was, you know, the Peyton Manning drop back, right? Read the coverage, throw the ball to the right guy.
Right.
Check all the runs to the correct place. You know, hand the ball to Noah Cortez. And then the other guy had a huge arm. I don't know how far he could throw it. He could throw it out of the stadium, probably.
Yeah.
But we used him to run the football, add gaps. And so we were really difficult because it was all load up when the second kid come in, because he could throw it. He could throw it a mile. I mean, he wasn't as accurate. But So we were a lot of fun, and it was just magic in a bottle, you know. Bunch of kids that had started for 3 years.
Yeah.
An offensive line was a bunch of tough guys and big and strong and 220-pound tailback.
Yeah, man. You get a good offensive line and a big bruiser like that. That's a recipe for success right there, if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, well, he would, you know, those 4-yard runs in the first quarter, you know, in the second quarter they were 6, in the third quarter they were 9, and in the fourth quarter they'd give up.
They didn't want to tackle him.
We can't tackle that guy anymore.
Right. That's funny. It's always, like I said, it was fun to watch kind of from afar, watching the success you guys had that year. So those are memories that will last a lifetime. Switching gears again, because this is how my brain works, just in case you couldn't tell. You talked a little bit, talked about the 10 years in the league, talked about the thing that kind of jumped out to me when you said it was the no taxi squad. That means you spent the better part of your career practicing every day against the gangrene defense, one of the arguably best defenses in the history of the NFL. What was that like? What was practice like for a Buddy Ryan with Philadelphia Eagles team? Because I've got my thoughts on what it was like, but I want to hear from the horse's mouth what it was like.
Yeah, brother, it was, you know, it was either get better or be gone.
Right.
So training camps under Buddy Ryan were today's standards were brutal.
Right.
You know, they were brutal. They were brutal when I was living through it, but I was younger. and they were just so physical. It was, you know, it was tackle the running back to the ground, you know, off his line. If you're the backside of the zone, you're cutting.
Right.
And it was a fist fight every day, but you know, it was Jerome Brown and it was Clyde Simmons, it was Reggie White, Mike Pitts and Mike Golick and Seth Joyner. I mean, you know, it was just an all-star cast on defense of just incredible, incredible football players. And you know, we would it was 6 weeks of full pads, two practices a day. 2 hours and 5 minutes. Each practice was 2 hours and 5 minutes. You know, Buddy was an Army. You know, he was in the Army, so everything was, you know, down to the minute.
Right.
And, you know, we were sequestered off in a little college town called Westchester, Pennsylvania, you know, living in a dormitory. It was old school. And, you know, just got better, right? You know, I mean, Buddy Ryan's 46 defense, you know, Reggie White was at the nose in the 46 defense. You know, and if they were in their base 4-3, it was Jerome Brown in a shade nose, you know, with a tilt. He was a tilted nose. And, right, and I just remember we'd be an inside run and, you know, the offensive line coach is screaming, get some movement. And I'm like, dude, I could smell Jerome's breath. You come up here and get some movement.
Right.
You know? I mean, and so, but those training camps, being as physical as they were, you know, looking back, it made us really good the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Almost every year under Buddy, we started the season off slow because we would come out of training camp. You know, I'd lose 15 pounds in training camp. You just, you know, it was 92 degrees and, you know, you're practicing 4 hours a day and, you know, meeting's till 9 o'clock and, you know, you didn't even know what day it was, you know, and just get up and do the same thing over and over again.
It's crazy to look back on. I mean, you've got to sit there sometimes and just shake your head at the guys in today's NFL complaining about training camp. I mean,
oh my gosh.
Cause the stuff that, but you talk about Buddy Ryan, that was everywhere. Everybody was practicing like that. I mean,
Bill Parcells.
Right. You know, but that was the NFL. Johnson. The NFL was a tougher, and I hate to use that term tougher. It was a tougher game back then. I mean, it's
yes.
The proof is in the pudding.
The game was tougher. The game was, you know, the training camps were more difficult, right? The games itself, maybe not for the offensive defensive line.
Right.
The game was more physical. You know,
right.
the blindside blocks and, cutting below, blocking below the waist and, just everything was more allowable.
Right.
And so those big, strong, freaks among freaks, the Lawrence Taylors, they took, go back and watch some video of what he did to quarterbacks.
Oh,
watch
man.
What Reggie White did to, quarterbacks. And, you can't, so everything was more, watching Aaron Donald pick up offensive linemen, throw them around. Don't get me wrong. It's a physical football game.
Right.
But training camps, please don't say anything about training camp being hard right now.
No.
Right? It's like going to the California spa.
Yeah.
Right? And going out there in baseball caps and walkthroughs and,
Take it
easy. We would do more practices and pads in a week in training camp than they're allowed to do an entire season, right?
I mean,
what can they do? Eight padded practices in a year? Or 12?
It's crazy.
Something silly. Yeah.
It's crazy.
We would go full pads during the season. We were full pads every week on Wednesday and Thursday. Right, Tuesday was our day off, so we were in full pads on Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah.
And if we lost the previous Sunday, we were in full pads on Friday.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, that was Buddy's punishment. You lose on Sunday, well, then you're in full pads the next Friday.
Yeah. Wow. It's no wonder your body started breaking down on you. I mean, that was the league back then.
I don't want. I don't want. I don't want anybody to think I'm complaining. I wouldn't change anything.
Oh no, no doubt. Yeah,
I wouldn't give up one surgery or one anything for any experiences that I had.
Right.
I was lucky, and I knew I was lucky then, and I know I'm lucky now. And that's just the way it was. God blessed me with the ability to play football, and I was going to go use it until I used it up.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. It's pretty neat. I can't even imagine the experiences, the memories you've got with that. So, that's cool. We're gonna put your memory to a test now, though, because you've got this is the only hard question you've got, Coach.
All right.
And you're gonna get a two-parter because I've got two parts of this for you. So the first part, if you could put together a Mount Rushmore of offensive linemen. Guys you played with, maybe guys you coached or guys you liked watching as a player or a coach, who would be on that 5-man offensive line?
Do I have to pick just position or can I just pick five?
You can just pick five. Yeah, absolutely. This
awesome.
This question is adaptable to anybody. So you can pick just five. You can pick, whatever you want. It doesn't have to be position.
Okay. So start with Anthony Munoz. We get through my list, there's going to be a common theme, but right.
Yeah.
Anthony Munoz, was, just a monster.
Yeah.
Absolute monster. And I can tell you some stories, obviously never played with him, but I can tell you some stories about, Anthony Munoz that we just blow your mind.
Yeah.
Right. Then, Bruce Matthews. Okay. He played for the Oilers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Brother Clay. All right. So Bruce, center, guard, both tackles.
Yep.
And went to the Pro Bowl at all those positions.
Yep.
Watching him on coach's tape, end zone copy, you couldn't believe athleticism.
Yeah.
You just could not believe the athleticism. The man could change direction like a running back. It was, if he would have stayed at one position.
Yeah.
Career, people might be talking about him. They might put him ahead. Some people would put him ahead of Anthony Munoz.
Yeah, he does not get the credit he deserves. You are right. And this is a guy. It's a guy. He's into the Hall of Fame. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame football player, and not a lot of people talk about him. But yeah, he was a machine.
Right, and look at the number of years he played. It's just silly.
Right,
just absolutely silly. My next one, I want to say guy. All right. So, but I'm going to go ahead and throw him out there. All right. See, some people listen to this because this is old school. He's even actually, he finished up his career just as I was starting.
Mm-hmm.
And his career was short, comparatively. But Dwight Stevenson.
Oh, okay.
Played center for the Miami Dolphins. He had a relatively short career, right? He had a devastating knee injury,
mm-hmm.
on a cheap shot from Marty Lyons from the New York Sack Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
But he was doing things athletically that no one had thought about doing back in the early. He was doing it in the early 80s.
Right.
Right. He was the first center to pull. He was, and at the time when you see that on film, you're like, no, that's got to be a mistake, you know. So he was doing things that no one else could do. He was not a big man, but he was freakishly talented.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to put just one guy from the Dallas Cowboys on there, but I've got two that I'm struggling with.
Is that allowed as an Eagle? Are you allowed to put?
No, it's not allowed. It's not. If this is on in Philadelphia, I'm not sure I can put two Eagles on or two Cowboys on there. All right, so the left tackle, right, Eric Williams,
mm-hmm.
pre knee injury. He had a injury, an ACL injury that he came back from, and he played a long time after that. But he did not – same. But pre-knee injury, he's the only guy that team would put one-on-one with Reggie White.
Yeah.
And he could block Reggie White. He was just as big. He was just as strong. He was just as athletic as Reggie White. Now, better than him and longer career, right, is the Freakazoid Sonoma State.
Yeah.
You know, gosh, my poor old brain.
Oh.
Maybe my CTE's kicking in.
Don't say that. Larry Allen.
Yeah. Larry Allen was a freak amongst freaks.
Yeah.
I mean, because you look at his measurables didn't stack up. Short arms, short legs.
Right.
Right. Not super tall. I mean, he was tall. Not Anthony Munoz, not Eric Williams, you know, not that kind of height.
Right.
But the where he made up for it was his work ethic. You know, he was a I've said this term, freak amongst freaks. He was absolutely a weight room guy that you can't believe watching the numbers that he could throw around and things he could do in the weight room. You know, it's like he didn't even know what the numbers were on the bar. They just told him to lift it, and he did it. You know, I mean, it was kind of scary. You know, and his ability to run at 325 pounds. You know, and there's another guy. You know, if they would have just left him at guard,
yeah,
he might have been the best guard that ever played. But you know, he had to play some seasons at tackle, and you know, that's just what offensive linemen do. And he didn't care that he was going to be called the best, greatest guard ever. You know, that would have never crossed his mind, I'm sure.
Right.
You know, the Dallas Cowboys asking, you know, Jimmy Johnson asking to play tackle. It's what's going to help the team. And,
right.
You know, it's what he did.
It's what linemen do.
It's what linemen do. And then, yeah. All right, so my last guy I'm going to put on, and he did not – this is only because I absolutely love the guy with all my heart. And he didn't have the NFL career that he had in college, but it's Dave Remington.
Oh yeah, it's a good one.
Right. So Dave and I played at Philadelphia together for a couple of years. I absolutely think Dave hung the moon. You know, by the time he got to Philadelphia, you know, after his 6 years in Cincinnati, you know, and those years at Nebraska, his body had kind of given out on him.
Right.
No, not kinda. His body had given out on him. You know, he'd tell you the same thing. But the knowledge, you know, because he was the old guy and I'm the young guy coming in, you know. So in 87, excuse me, in 88, he started at center and I started at left guard all those games.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 89, I moved to center and he was the backup. He was the swing guy, the center guard, one of the backup guys. And the things he taught me for a young guy, you know, were different than just X's and O's. You know, I mean, I already knew who to block.
Right.
You don't get to that level without being able to pick up an offense. But, you know, when to do this and when to do that and what to look for and how to study film.
Right.
How to study film. You know, how to prepare yourself, you know, on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to be a great player on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, he's one of the greats for me. All those guys, I'm big fans of as well. You know, Remington, especially, guys don't realize Remington was like one of the definition of the Husker power weightlifting back in the day. And he's got a damn college football award named after him. Like,
that's right.
He's got to be pretty decent when you've got a freaking award named after you.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. He won two Outlands. Right, he's got an award for the best center in the country, and he was a different animal back then,
no doubt,
different animal.
So all right, so now part two of this, and you're getting this, you're the first one to ever get this. Give me a defensive line Mount Rushmore, four guys, and you don't I'll make it easy for you. You don't have to list any Philadelphia Eagles, so it can be all guys you played against.
All right. Well, I mean, you know, I played against Reggie White, right?
Okay. We well, that's Green true. Bay. Yeah.
All right. So I got to play against Reggie. Got when I say got to, right? They were on our schedule, so I had to. Oh man, Mount Rushmore of defensive linemen. Okay. Go off the reservation. Let me pick a couple. Do I count Lawrence Taylor as a defensive lineman?
Absolutely.
All right. Look, so Lawrence Taylor, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, the best player, you know, changed football.
Yes.
The only guy when I was playing, right, that changed game plans. We game planned our pass protections around Lawrence Taylor. We game planned our run game around Lawrence Taylor. You know, we didn't. Now, it was a little easy you didn't have to check into the three technique or the shade because the Giants back then were straight odd team. But, you know, you checked plays. Some plays you wanted to run to Lawrence, not very many, but most, you know, you even running away from him, you know, you had to game plan for him. So he changed the game. Let's see. Well, obviously Reggie White. So if I can't pick two Eagles, if I can't pick Jerome Brown.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So for a run, so the guys that scared me, Keith Millard, okay, was the three technique.
Oh, okay.
Right. He had the sack record for a year or for a while, right? Had 21 sacks in a season as a three technique.
Right.
Right. He was the guy before John Randall. And he was the opposite of John Randall, right? Keith Millard was from University of Texas. He was 6'5", tall, lanky, 6'5", 260 pounds. Could run like the wind. And just relentless pass rusher, right? As an offensive lineman, right, Tony, you've been there, right? The best thing you can do is to get a defensive lineman to stop his feet and try to change directions. Well, Keith would never would stop his feet and change directions. You know, I mean, he was just so explosive and so – he was just so dominant. Man, boy, there's a lot of other defensive ends. From Charles Mann to Chris Dolman.
Ooh, two good names.
Oh, man. I'm going to put Chris Dolman over Charles Mann because Chris Dolman hit me harder than any human being, than anybody's ever been hit in their life. Absolutely wrecked me.
Yeah.
You know, busted a couple ribs, Which, by the way, that's a lot of fun playing a game, a couple games after that with Busted Ribs.
But, yeah, as an offensive lineman, that's no bueno.
Yeah, you know, but again, Chris Doman was a guy that scared everybody to death.
Right.
The guy that was toughest for us inside,
mm-hmm.
Was a guy named Eric Swann.
Oh, okay.
All right, Swann. All right, so Eric Swann was Reggie White, but down inside.
Right.
6'5", 6'6", 310 pounds. And when you grabbed a hold of him, you could just feel like, you know, I'm not going to be standing in front of this guy for very long. Right? I mean, even with, you know, right, Reggie White, you get your hands on Reggie White, you knew, right, even though my hands are on his 9 and his 2, and I've got my feet apart, but you can just feel the strength in Reggie that you were not going to be there very long.
Right.
You know, that's the way Eric Swann was. You know, those are the guys that scared us to death.
Right.
Leon Lett was a freak. You know, the 49ers had some freaks, you know,
right.
Fagan, you know, Kevin Fagan, trying to go through the league, you know, Dexter Mann and Charles Manley, you know, Dexter Manley and Charles Mann at the Redskins, right. Leon Lett, you know, those are the guys that just scares you to death.
Yeah.
Most of the guys, you know, Pat Swilling, but he was a little bitty dude, but he was really good. He was really good.
Was it? And this is just from my own question. I don't want to keep you too long. You know, I'm a huge Bears fan. So, you know, obviously when Buddy left, playing against those guys, were those guys still, you know, the intimidation, you know, going against Hampton and McMichael, were they still, you know, the intimidating factor that they'd been before, or were they kind of on the tail end down?
Yeah, they were on the tail end going down, right? So I got to play against some Hall of Famers on the tail end going down, right? I got to play in 88, we played against the Dallas Cowboys, right? So Randy White and Too Tall Jones were still there, you know,
yeah.
But they were in their 15th year, 14th year.
Right.
Now, Steve McMichael is probably the only guy, except when I played against Reggie when he was with Green Bay. It was the only time going into the game, I can tell you a story about Lawrence Taylor, but that I was really McMichael's the first guy that really intimidated me, and I hadn't been intimidated, right? Not through high school or college, you know, but Steve McMichael, you know, was an intimidating. He talked to you the whole time,
right?
You know, he's right there in your face. Now, we played them in 1988 in the Fog Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, and so I was against McMichael the whole time. Siri just said, here's what I found about the Fog Bowl. I'm going to watch. I played a good game. And, you know, we could have won that game. And Chris Carter had bad games. You know, mm-hmm. They both dropped touchdown passes, right? And then the fog rolls in, and you know, they just turn around, and hand the ball off to Neil Anderson and Peyton, and you know, the game was over. But I played a good game, and after that game, in my exit interview with Buddy Ryan, and the thing you probably heard about Buddy, he had a nickname for everybody, and. If he didn't have a nickname, if he didn't like you, he called right. you by your jersey number. Right.
Okay.
He never called anybody by their name. But so my exit interview, I had already had my meeting with my offensive line coach, and I met with Buddy, and he's like, you know, all he said was, you know, what are you doing this off season? You know, when am I going to see you? How much am I going to see you? And hey, you had a pretty good game against Tex, right? Which was Tex was his nickname for. Steve McMichael, right?
Mm-hmm.
He went to University of Texas, so that was his nickname. So that was high praise coming from Buddy Ryan, by the
right.
way. You had a pretty good game. That was high praise.
That was
like getting right. That was like, yeah, anointed. Right. You were told you had a pretty good game.
Right. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Coach, like I said, I don't want to keep you too long, man. I've kept you long enough. Do me a favor before I get you out of here. Drop your Twitter handle for all the listeners so they can find you and talk some ball with you on Twitter.
All right. I'm going to have to look it up here. Hold on.
All right.
So, right, because I changed it. It is, David Alexander, you can look it up that way, but it's at David, A-L-E-X, 72. So, at David Alex 72 is my at on Twitter.
Awesome.
Yeah, man, hit me up, follow me. You know, let's talk ball. I'll talk ball with anybody. Love offensive linemen, offensive line coaches. You know, we figured out, man. Let's sit down and get on the dry erase board too. I love it.
Heck yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Coach. This was an absolute blast to get to talk to you about some old football stuff. You know, it was great for me. Hopefully it was good for you too. You know, it was,
yeah.
I hope you had a good time.
I did. Had a blast.
You know, this was a long time coming. I appreciate you coming on. You know, wish you nothing but the best and looking forward to talking with you again sometime.
All right, brother. Yeah, that'd be great, man. I look forward to it. And I sure appreciate you calling and asking. Like I said, I love it. And thanks, Tony. It was my honor, man. It was, I greatly appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you, Coach. And like I said, we'll talk soon. So thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
All right. The Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by the online clinic at Chief Pigskin. The online clinic by Chief Pigskin is a collection of coaching content from over a decade of travels from a high school coach. With video quality that is unmatched, you should check them out at clinic.chiefpigskin.com.